Good morning. Thank you for being here. So I am with the Center for Health Equity Research and Promotion at the Philadelphia VA Medical Center. Let's see how to use this. I have no relationships to disclose, but do want to mention that funding for this study comes from the VA, from our Health Services Research and Development Department, and from the Center for the Evaluation of Patient-Aligned Care Teams in the VA. So a little background I probably don't have to give to this group in this room. We know that intimate partner violence refers to physical, sexual, psychological, and social violence. Social violence being isolation, alienation, economic abuse that's perpetrated by a current or former intimate partner. We know that more than 1 in 3 women in the United States experience physical violence, rape, or stalking by an intimate partner in their lifetimes, and that IPV is associated with a wide range of physical and mental health problems, social and economic impacts, suicide, suicidal ideation, substance misuse, unplanned pregnancies, and sexual risk. So screening for IPV in the healthcare setting can identify patients who may benefit from support and from services to promote healing and future safety. Screening in and of itself can also be a therapeutic intervention. And this is why professional healthcare and anti-violence organizations recommend routine screening for all or select groups of patients. So you may know that recently the United States they recently updated their recommendations to recommend screening for all women of childbearing age for IPV. So the graphic here just shows that screening for IPV in the healthcare setting can lead to disclosures, that is, patients revealing that they have experienced IPV. It can lead to treatment, referral, and support. And these interventions can lead to, we hope, increased well-being and decreased future violence. So the findings that I'm going to present today are based on a study that took place at the Philadelphia VA Medical Center with a sample of women veteran patients who are ages 22 to 64. And this study had two phases. In the first phase, we conducted face-to-face surveys with 249 women veteran patients. We asked them if a healthcare provider had ever asked them about IPV, that is, their experiences with IPV, if they had ever told a healthcare provider about their experiences with IPV, and if they thought healthcare providers should ask that patients about their experiences with IPV. They were all veterans themselves, yep, and they were patients at the VA Medical Center in Philadelphia. In the second phase of the study, we conducted face-to-face qualitative interviews with 25 women who had also participated in the first phase. And here we want to look a little bit more deeper about their thoughts on IPV inquiry and disclosure and their recommendations for screening for IPV in the healthcare setting. So this is our sample that was included in this study. And there's the survey sample and the interview sample. Remember, the interview sample is contained within the survey sample as well, but breaking them out so you can see the demographic differences in these groups. Note that the large majority of the participants were not employed. Many of them were on disability. Many of them had military service-related disabilities. And those who are identified in the VA as having a service-connected disability receive some financial compensation from the VA. We also asked about their current financial situation, and the greatest proportion noted that they have just enough to get by. So they're basically living just at the edge. So this first question, has a healthcare provider ever asked you about safety, violence, or stress in your relationship with an intimate partner? And this was the wording that we used on this survey. 55% of the respondents said yes, they had been asked at some point by some provider. 36% said that they had been asked by a primary care provider. 14% had been asked by a gynecologist. and 30% said that they had been asked by a mental health provider. Note that we recruited these patients from a primary care clinic, so they had all been to primary care providers. They had not all been to mental health providers. And they were not all asked by providers in the VA. Some were in the VA, some was outside of the VA. This was just lifetime, have you ever been asked? 27% said that they had ever told a healthcare provider about violence or safety concerns they were having in an intimate relationship. 12% told a primary care provider, 3% told a gynecologist, 21% told a mental health provider. Participants who had ever been asked were far more likely to have ever told, although there were some who had not been asked who had told a provider. Sometimes that may be that somebody comes in, the reason for a visit perhaps is due to an experience of violence. Yeah. Yes, so we had, I don't think I have that in here, but 86% had reported experience of lifetime violence, includes psychological, physical, sexual. I think it was 81% had experienced psychological violence, 50-something percent was physical, and 30-something percent was sexual. So yeah, high rates of violence exposure here. So do you feel that healthcare providers should ask about safety, violence, or stress in intimate relationships? 83% said yes, they should ask. 6% said no. And the other 11% said either I'm not sure, I don't know, or it depends. What does it depend on? Reason for visit, they said. You know, if they're coming in to talk about that, they should ask. Or if they're coming in complaining about something that may be related. If there are some red flags, so if there's bruises or kinds of indications. And the patient-provider relationship and the provider sensitivity. So, yes, they should ask if there's a comfort level there, if they can ask in a sensitive, private, secure way. We'll talk more about particularly the patient-provider relationship here with the findings from our qualitative interviews. So this is what the women said in our one-on-one qualitative interviews about their thoughts about providers asking and their experiences with that. One theme that came out of the analysis of our qualitative interviews is that patients said providers should ask, that asking about violence facilitates disclosure of violence. So a quote from one of our participants is, "If somebody would have reached out and asked me, I would have. Yeah, I definitely would have told them." And failure to ask inhibits this disclosure. Another woman said, "No one ever asked me about it. You know, I was walking around with a black eye and not a single question. So I may have talked about it if I had been given the chance, but I wasn't going to bring it up on my own." This is consistent with what we see in the literature, that spontaneous disclosure of experiences of intimate partner violence to healthcare providers is rare. But patients will often disclose if they're asked. And this woman in particular was sort of surprised that here she actually had a physical sign of violence and no one was asking her about it. Another theme that came up is they said not just ask, but ask again, ask more than once. That patients may not be ready to disclose the first or second time that they're asked. Another woman said, "I said no," this was in response to a screening question, "because I didn't feel like talking about it. At that time, I wasn't ready to talk about it or get into it with anybody. There were a lot of things I didn't tell her," that is, her provider, "when I first started seeing her. But once you get to know a person and you know the doctor, you can start opening up and saying different stuff." Another woman said, "You know how you might have an issue, but you might not feel ready to talk about it? Maybe you might not want to talk about it this year, but maybe next year you might feel like, maybe I'm ready to discuss this." So here they're talking about, you know, you might not have that comfort at first, or you might not be feeling like you want to get into it on that day. So don't just ask me once, but ask me again, because maybe the next time you ask me, I'll be ready to talk about it. It's important also to note that maybe the first time you ask, they haven't experienced it. Maybe it happens later on. So not just asking, but asking again and again. And when you ask, make it safe to disclose. So decisions to disclose may depend on the patient's comfort level with the provider. One participant said, I don't think I'd be comfortable talking to my primary care provider. She did ask once, and then I shut down on her, so she never asked again. I felt like she was judging. I did not feel safe. And if you feel comfortable with your doctors, you can pretty much talk to them about anything. But if you don't feel comfortable with a certain doctor that you have, you'll never tell them anything. So in the interviews, we asked, what helps you feel more or less comfortable talking with healthcare providers? And this patient said, someone who is kind, uses my name, good eye contact. And even if a patient doesn't disclose experience of violence, asking about it shows that you care, and again, may be an intervention in and of itself. It's nice that somebody actually cares about stuff other than your blood pressure. And another participant said, if you're not ready to tell, but you see that question, you know that they care and they're interested and they may be able to help. It's like a signal that this is something we care about here. So putting the question out there, whether you're putting it on a piece of paper or asking it or having it up on a sign, signals to the patients, this is something we want to know about, this is something we care about, this is something we may be able to help you with. As the recommendations to do more of this screening get implemented in more healthcare settings, this may become more a part of routine care, and patients may already come into that setting feeling like this is something I can talk to my primary care provider about, this is something I should talk to my healthcare provider about. But until then, it seems that patients don't really think that this is something I should bring up in the healthcare setting. We haven't given them that signal. And the benefits of just disclosure, regardless of whether you get any services after that. Disclosure itself may be a therapeutic intervention. As this participant said, if I could have spilled my beans a long time ago when I started coming here, I definitely would have. And I think that would have made me feel so much better. Just to be able to talk, it probably would have prevented me from, you know, wanting to harm myself if I felt like I had somebody to talk to. And I know I guess they're busy and they got to hurry up and see us and hurry up and get us out. But just that little talk, just that, you know, to speak with someone, it helps. It goes a long way. So to be able to disclose that to someone, to talk to someone, to know that there's somebody there that you can talk to, can make a big difference. And this patient was even saying, that may have stopped me from wanting to hurt myself. It makes a big difference just to be able to talk. So we know that there may be multiple benefits to screening patients for experience of IPV, that we can identify people who may need or want services related to experience of partner violence, that there can be a therapeutic benefit of disclosure, and that it helps us indicate to patients that IPV is a healthcare issue. Patients think providers should screen, but screening must be done in a supportive, sensitive, and safe manner. So it's really critical as we move forward with implementing routine screenings in healthcare settings that we do it in such a way that is careful and sensitive and isn't causing patients to shut down and never open up about it. They may not want to disclose on the first time, but we want to make sure that that door is open so that they feel like they can disclose when they're ready to do so. And that even if they're not disclosing, they're still benefiting from being asked. So that's my contact information. I don't know if you want to do questions now, I think. We did not ask about sexual orientation. Did you have thoughts about?
Yeah, I'm just sort of wondering if it would be different, like there are people, you know, how to respond differently based on that, or healthcare setting, how the provider would feel around.
Yeah. So in this study, we didn't ask about sexual orientation. I will say it came up sometimes in the interviews, and I've had this experience in other studies conducting interviews with women where women will, I've had a couple of experiences of women sort of starting the interview being vague about gender pronouns and then saying, revealing, well, this was a female partner, but it was a real relationship kind of thing. And so there's some of that, like, you're not going to take it seriously if I tell you it was a same-sex relationship, potentially. That's something that we haven't studied in this, but anecdotally through the interviews, I would feel like that could absolutely be relevant.
Yeah, Megan.
I know. It's very important. The VA has this kind of big strategic goal to your veteran center of care and the voice of the veteran. Did you sample in all primary care studies or women's health clinics or both?
We, just in our women's health clinic, just in Philadelphia. So this was in one setting. We asked them about their experiences with any healthcare providers anywhere. But yeah, this was just in our women's health clinic.
So I was interested to hear about this new initiative where physicians are being encouraged to ask about these issues. Do you know anything about training that they're getting? Because obviously the patients are aware of the fact that not everyone is kind of prepared to handle the question or the information. So I'm just curious if you have any ideas about training.
It's a really good question, and I think that the training is critical, you know, and I'm almost hesitant to encourage broad-based screening, you know, if we're not accompanying that with making sure that it's done in a supportive and sensitive way. I think the training is hard, right? This is not something that typically is emphasized in medical schools. It seems very kind of idiosyncratic. It depends on the practice and the person.
In Connecticut, it's part of the licensing positions. Post-training, CME credits, they're with domestic violence.
So, and I think there is some training about, you know, what is domestic violence and how does that come up? It sounds like where we also need the training is making sure that the communication is there. You know, of course, healthcare providers get training about doctor-patient communication, but Karen Rhodes, who's here, has done a lot of work in this area. And, you know, even little things, I always point to one of Karen's articles that the quote is, you're not the victim of abuse, are you? Right, so the way we ask the questions, people looking at the computer screen, and another piece from Karen's article was, you know, any domestic violence, the patient says yes, and the next question is, okay, are you allergic to any medications? I think we have a long way to go with figuring all of that out. You know, we have concerns about documentation. That's a big concern in the VA. We have electronic medical records. They're national. A lot of people can see them. So there's concerns about confidentiality, privacy. In some states, there's mandated reporting. So the screening piece is good. It needs to be done carefully, and we need to consider the then what, making sure that there are services and that it's safe to do that disclosure.
Okay, so we're going to move on. I'm sorry, but we've got two other presenters, and then we'll have a question also for questions.
Thank you.
Yes, those are good.